PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and returning to the show is my good buddy, Mr. James Miles. You know his work on the Hackers Paradise homepage, writer extraordinaire, and you can also find his commentary on the forum. James, welcome back, buddy.
Look what the cat dragged in. It's like you're slumming it this week with me.
Well, it's not been a great couple weeks. It's been a couple of challenging moments, but we've got some great shows lined up.
Oh yeah.
And I'm really excited to have you on, because every time you come on, I have this whole list of things we're supposed to talk about. Kind of like when I have Dean on or Josh on, we never get to them. So hopefully we hit like one of the topics tonight.
One's pretty good.
Yeah. You see any good commercials lately?
Oh, I don't
know. Wait, commercials or ads?
It's a hot topic in my house.
Yeah, we're not touching that one with a 50,000 foot pole. Considering how much is going on already, I would imagine by the time this comes out, people are sick of talking about it anyways, and opinions are probably well formed at that point. So, unfortunate what had happened this week, and yeah, we'll go ahead and leave it at that. But I want to jump back a little bit from there to talk about something that happened this weekend that created a lot of speculation and irritation and sort of a recognition of what happens on tour and a little bit of validation to what did occur overseas to Bryson. What I'm talking about is Wyndham Clark. He pressed his wedge down behind the ball about nine times before finally striking it. And this includes the moment where he compresses the club behind the ball and then does that like practice swing from there. So he swings inside. You know what I'm talking about? You see all that?
Oh yeah. No, I think that's underselling it though, because he addressed the ball. He patted the club. He went back to the bag, got a different club, came back, addressed the ball, did it again, went back to the club, got a different club, did it again, eventually went back to the original club. And then on about the 12th time he hit it. That's, some of this stuff I've kind of been like, yeah, whatever, you know, the Bryson thing I laughed at because it's Bryson, but like, this is about as egregious as you can get to me. And it was like watching, and I was like, oh, even the buddies at the golf course, my club, like sent in the text, like, do you see this crap? It's like, it's not a great look.
So the Bryson thing was funny to me because he walked around the ball as though he were Bigfoot tromping through the forest. So my point was never necessarily like we can definitively say that it was shifted. What always shocked me is how indifferent he was and how visually intentional it looked. As mm-hmm. though like there was no fear of anything negative happening. And there was a good counter argument to that, suggesting that there were many, many examples throughout the week of people doing something similar. And by people, I mean professionals trying to win the tournament and not getting called on it. And I think that sort of carried over into this moment, because when you look at the number of times on tour where they zoom in on a guy local to the green, there's a good chance he's going to be pushing that club down behind it. In my rounds, because I see people on tour do it, I'm like, oh, this seems normal. I should do this. When in reality, it is very much against the rules to improve your lie. I'd love to hear your perspective on that in total. Like, has the tour just sort of lost the plot on that? Should it even be a rule at this point?
I mean, I don't know. It's hard. I would say in like typical, if he didn't do it 12 times, I have a completely different stance on it, right? Like if it happened, like if you address it and you sit the club and you press the club and you go, like, okay, maybe that was innocent, maybe you didn't mean to, but like the going back to the well thing, and I think part of that falls into to me is I feel like a lot of them just know the tour's not going to do anything. And yes, they, like, we had the Bryson thing and everything else, but like, again, that's where that was, right? That was not that's not the tour acting on all this stuff and going through everything like this. And you have, I don't know. It's should it be a rule? Probably. Yeah. Like just, but it should be a general, like, don't improve your lie. Don't be like an idiot and press your, you know, three different clubs down six or seven times. And like with force. And also, dude, don't be an idiot. Understand, like, you're going to have a camera on you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what are we doing?
Well, the problem I have is, I guess, multifaceted at this point. First of all, not everyone has a camera shoved up their backsides on every golf shot. And it's an unfortunate reality of tour golf that the visual presence of that would suggest it happened to that player. What we're not seeing is the non-covered guy who did it, let's say 10 times over the course of a round. Secondary to that, the rough is typically so obnoxious on tour that it's like, I sort of get it when you put your club behind it and have to reconsider, like, oh, I can't even get my club behind the ball, let alone on the ball. So I'm going to go switch my club. The biggest issue I have, and this is sort of something I touched on already, is I don't think there's a general fear by the tour players that they'll get called on it. I think there's just sort of this casual understanding that there's a level of a difference that exists, and it's too much of a nuance to suggest they'll actually get penalized. And I think one of the best arguments for that was someone on the forum who said, what's the threshold? If you push it down once and go, fine. What if you push it down once and then go get a different club and then push it down again? So that's twice. What if you do it six times? Is it too many times at 10? Like, where does the limit run? I think that's a perfectly reasonable argument, but it also shows how silly and nuanced these rules already are.
Well, yeah, I mean, that falls into the arguments that we've always heard against relief from a divot in the fairway, right? Mm-hmm. How do you know that's a divot? How can that's a divot to one person? It might not be a divot to another person. What if it's an almost? So you get into all this. The other thing that I take from it all is, if we don't have what happened to Bryson happen, is this a conversation? if we don't have Trenchgate going on, right, with all this going on, because, you know, all, like, you're catching fire now because you're in the attention, you're in the scope. Like, is this even being conversed? Is somebody recording it, and are we discussing it so much? Like, in my opinion, we should all still be making fun of Patrick Cantlay for taking so long over a golf ball more than this.
Yeah. Well, it's a really big challenge to say one or the other, but I think the point to be made is we've seen it happen so many times that it's like we've become numb to it. And the first time we reacted to it was when Bryson got penalized for it. Cause it's like, wait, everyone does that. What's the problem? And then of course you go onto Twitter, which, by the way, is an absolute fucking cesspool.
It's not worth
at this point.
It's not,
like, my God.
It's not worth it.
And you have 10 videos of guys spanning 10 years who've pushed away Heather with which to hit their golf shot. It's like, yeah, dude, we know it's happening. We see it every week on TV. The question is, why isn't it penalized? And what are we waiting for if we want it to be penalized? And I liken that to the reality of players will be more cautious if the threat of a two-stroke penalty exists.
Yep. Like,
you don't see guys dragging their club through a bunker, Patrick Reed not included, obviously. But like the reality is, they know if they drag their club in the bunker or they ground their club in the bunker, they'll get called on it. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's just not enough of a threat by the tour to actually call them. It's similar to pace of play. There's no worry you're ever going to get slapped on it by pace of play, because no one's ever getting called on for pace of play unless you're like an amateur or some dude like 400th on the list, you know, trying to just get by. Then they have no concern about hurting your feelings, right?
No, I mean, that's exactly the comparison I was going to make. Like, that's the issue we have now with pace of play, is that they know there's not even a veiled threat. What do we get with, like, hey, you're on the clock. Okay, well, it's the clock. You're on it. You know, it's like, okay, there is no, like, I mean, at least with what happened with Bryson, maybe it's like, hey, I shouldn't march through the weeds and, you know, do all this stuff. But I don't know, man.
Let me put the other side of this. The golf is considered a gentleman's game and you're intended to call your own penalties. This is the one thing I think that's really lost on this moment, is you're supposed to be the person to say, like, hey, my ball moved. It's a big deal. I need to be penalized for it. Now, I'm incredibly guilty when I'm playing casual rounds, not in tournament play. I don't mess around tournament play, but in casual rounds, my ball ends up in a divot. That thing is coming straight out of the divot 100%. Because, you know, screw everything about that moment. Who cares? It's my handicap. I'll deal with it in a year. Whatever. Who cares? But on tour, there's an expectation that you are self-policing And if you don't do it, then you're going against sort of the structured ideology of the game being that which you call yourself on. So does that bother you at all that pros knowingly do it?
I mean, is it bother me? No. It is a great way of looking at it, because in this game, like, each of us kind of are the jury, right? You are for how you're going to dictate how you play, how you're known as a player around a club or whatever else. Like, you're the judge, the jury, the executioner, all this stuff. With them, I guess when you get millions of dollars involved and all these other things, does that change? Does that skew things? Does that skew how your mind works? Is it the grind of the conditions of all that, you know, they're trying to kick your teeth in with the setups and stuff like that? I'm not making excuses for it at all, but like, does that change something in your head? I don't know. I've never experienced that. That's all I can think of in that regard, is that maybe it kind of triggers the wiring. Maybe some of these guys are just so desperate to get every, you know, inch they can get against Scotty, which, yeah, we could talk about Scotty's ruling that happened after the other, like, so it happens. Like, these, does it matter who you are? Are they feeling the pressure of who they are and what they can get away with? I don't know.
Well, then the final concern or question I have on it is, if the tour does start applying it and people start getting penalized left and right over it, it's going to start looking like a basketball game where people are getting fouls all the time. And here's the challenge of that. It makes golf look a little bit stupid. And I'll give you an example where it felt incredibly stupid. It was on the, I believe, the European tour this week. A player went to step up to his ball and someone had poorly fixed a divot where he was standing. So he sort of pushed the divot with his foot and the loose divot came out, and then he stood over his ball and got a 2-stroke penalty for improving his stance or whatever it was. And it's like, that is the dumbest thing. First of all, his stance didn't improve. There's now a hole where his foot was. It's definitely not a better stance. But second of all, it's like, how stupid does that sound, right? He didn't move his ball. The divot wasn't on his ball or near his ball or anything like that. It was by his feet, and an improper divot, which was done by a fellow competitor, obviously, mm-hmm, which adjusted the way the course played from what they experienced, all had a negative impact on him enough to get him a 2-stroke penalty. Like, to me, that makes the game look stupid.
Agreed. Especially when you're a game that has screamed from the mountaintops that you're a game of integrity, mm-hmm, and you're a game of all these things. Well, that's cool, but then people spectate it and they see a dumb ruling like that, or they see the Bryson thing, or they see the video of what just happened with Wyndham, and they're like, so you're a game of integrity, but like, even I know as a non-golfer, what's that? it's a great point. Like, it's an interesting conundrum, and I don't know. I mean, the tour is so bad at handling so many things. Is it bad that I just don't have the belief that they'll ever find a fix for anything? Instead, they're just going to kick the can down the road and act like things don't happen, or they're going to go to the extreme and penalize, you know, some of the smaller guys, because you know they're not going to go after a Rory or anybody like that and put them on the spot. Oh God, could you imagine his press conference?
That's the hard part, is how do you take a tour seriously that treats people differently depending on your 100%. Status? Like, that's a problem. But you see them being very reactionary. They're openly admitting that the tour championship isn't generating enough interest or doesn't have the same level of conversation that it should, or they wish it would. I mean, I just read a thing from Roll App today talking about how, like, we understand it's not the NFL or the NHL. It's like, dude, why is that your measure? Why is that your barometer of success, trying to make the playoffs as critical? Like, we tune in for the majors. We tune in for the big tournaments like the Players.
Yep.
No one's tuning in midway through an NHL season and going all in on that moment for the whole weekend because X team is playing X team. It's fundamentally different. So even to be in the same conversation is just weird to me.
I would agree. I think that's actually a really good point on it all. Like, and you could kind of tell when the shift in things happened, when the playoff thing became like, yeah, let's be like this. And why? Like, be you. And I mean, some of this that I will say that's come out in the last couple of days, is it kind of gives me a glimmer of like, maybe we're going to get something fun again.
Mm-hmm.
But like, the playoffs, nobody's been into it from the beginning, and then they added more money to it, and they couldn't understand why we didn't care that they added more money to it. And honestly, in my opinion, I don't think the courses are all that fun to go watch. Like, I know why they are in locations that they're in as far as sponsorships and things like that, but like, if you're going to have a playoff, like, let's go to some of these big courses and play these events towards the end, or go back to match play.
Well, and, so that's what they're talking about, going to a 16-man match play, with the finals being, I think, down to the top eight, which I think is incredibly interesting. I mean, I know the threat of match play is always existent, where you desire your players to, number one, care emotionally, which is why we like the Ryder Cup. And they need to be playing well, which obviously matters, because you don't want to blow out for 4 hours of TV coverage where the guy's just getting his teeth kicked in. Like, who cares? But the other part of it is, like, you have to hope that a couple of your big names are in that top eight. Because if you have a bunch of mid-range names and that's your entire last 2 weeks of coverage, you know, there's a real threat there of generating no interest, let alone some interest.
But devil's advocate, with the system that we've got, hell, we've had a few times where we've started the playoffs and you already know who's going to win. Like, it's just mathematically, or they don't have to play the first XYZ events, and they're just going to come in and coast on it all. Or you end up with somebody winning it all that during the season didn't have all that many big moments. They were just consistent. So the difference in watching somebody like that hoist the trophy versus at least you go in match play. And I think most golfers will understand that crazy crap happens in match play. And some days you have it, some moments you have it, some days your focus is there, sometimes your focus isn't there, because match play is so different. And I think there's some intrigue there. I mean, I see the pros and cons of both, but like, clearly what's going on is not working. So why not try it again? Try a system again. And you know what? If it doesn't work, this is what drives me nuts about companies like this and organizations and entities. If it doesn't work, it doesn't mean you're stuck with it.
Yeah.
It means you continue.
No doubt.
Now, as long as you don't just raise the purses, right? Like, we can evolve and come, like, don't be afraid of trying something, because right now they haven't tried anything other than throwing more money at it.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of where they lost me. That plugged in, because of the whole conversation about money and versus skill. And I'm looking to watch guys play fundamentally better golf than I do for over the course of many days.
Telling the wrong story.
Yeah. It's just not a miss. So I'm excited to see the change. I think it's 2028 where it starts.
I think that's what I read.
Which is kind of funny, because, like, oh, I assume maybe they have some sort of deal in place with East Lake or something like that.
Carry
a
couple over of these, for so
yeah.
long.
Yeah. Couple of these courses and tournament sponsors where they can't really mess with it. But I don't know, man. Anything right now to make it more interesting. Like, we've had this awesome evolution of sports in my house with a 10-year-old sort of leading the charge in whatever sport he decides to be interested in, and the wife slowly following along, like, all right, I guess I can be interested in that. You know, it started with football, the Bengals, and then it moved to the Toronto Blue Jays last year, going to the World Series. But just before that, it was the Masters. So this has become a big thing in our house because of all the TV coverage with Full Swing. And so that's really cool to see that shift. And it's like, can they do anything to make my 10-year-old or then 11 or 12-year-old be interested enough to commit to a Sunday afternoon to watch? Because that'd be cool. I'd be down.
I think that's the area that they should be focusing on, not us. Like you're gonna get the diehards. Like, the diehards are gonna watch, and they're gonna bitch and complain about what they don't like and all the other things. Like, it's gonna happen, right? But how do you get those? Because I could tell you right now, I'm 4 years out of coaching high school golf, but you could go ask any of those kids at the moment, and I would ask them, like, do you guys not watch, like, golf on Sundays? No. Mm-hmm. I know that's boring. And now you're getting a lot of, well, no, I watch good, or I watch, you know, whoever else, instead of watching, like, you know, the pros on Sunday. But what's the allure for them to do that, other than saying, I'm watching the pros on Sunday? What's the hook? What's the story? What are you doing? Because they don't tell stories anymore.
Yeah.
So
You got to wonder, with the tour and the access they have to these players, like, can they do any sort of polished stuff? I know match play is a big conversation, but does it need to be a live match play? Can it be a non-televised or pre-scheduled match play that turns into an hour-long episode that goes on like a 10-point series that ends up on all your easy to watch, or YouTube, for example, Netflix, who cares, Prime, something where they can pull from that each week, I mean, and give them an hour. You only have to watch an hour instead of four to see what happens. Like that to me, that stuff's just being completely ignored, evolving.
That's it. That's what I was about to say. Like, you have to evolve. Mm-hmm. The reality is, it's like traditional TV is dying. I think we all know that. Like the era of you and I growing up and whatever, like, you know, in the limited amount of channels that we had or whatever else, and like that's the only access you had. Like that format itself, it's dying. Like it is. Whenever I had to get up and change the channel on the TV. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but
you know the term channel surfing, right?
Yes.
I would bet between the four children we have, at least three of them have no idea what that means.
No idea. No idea. That's solid bet.
That's crazy to think about that.
But that's why I feel like with the tour, they don't get it. Even the NFL has like made the effort, right, to do the Amazon thing, to do, as annoying as it is for some of us old fogies now that are used to, I want my channel, I want it on CBS and Fox, and I want to find my games. But like, they're making the effort to access these other methods of like even YouTube, whatever. And I feel like in the PGA, they just don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they have the greatest opportunity to be able to do stuff with that, with the amount of footage that they could have on golfers during a tournament and everything else. Like they should be able to come up with like a year long Hard Knocks kind of thing.
Oh, easily,
constantly.
Dude. Life and in just, the day and just would be so crush simple.
It. Just
yeah.
crush it.
And then
imagine
all, like
us getting that much Max Homa, like
having them go through their practice routines, and like, you don't need to use all of it. You just like little bits, like, why are you doing that, man? What's going on? And they walk through it and people will gain from that. Like people watch YouTube for those moments. And I think they do the same thing.
I do think that golf is, and this is not me doing the whole anti-tradition thing, but I do think the tradition aspect holds them back from taking big swings at stuff like that.
Mm.
Because you don't want to alienate, like the fear of alienating the core. But I mean, you remember.
And leave the senior tour alone.
yeah, because for years, like growing up, we were told, like, I remember hearing golfers aren't athletes. You mean you had Craig Stadler, you had John Daly, you had these guys like these golfers aren't athletes, whether they were or not, but now they are. Like they're freak athletes out there now. Mm. And they're only going to get more freaky. I played behind the entire OSU men's golf team today in my practice round with our buddy Derek. And like all like the freakishness is coming, even more than what we already have. So like, why will you not step out? But then golf is very protective of itself too. So it's, there's no easy answer, but you need to at least try to come up with an answer.
Yeah. That's a really hard balance, and something I've been battling a lot lately is, what does evolution mean for the game of golf? And I think as much as it sounds like sort of a traditionalist mentality, I think the only things I'm willing to not concede are, respect and just basic etiquette. I mean, those are the things that always end up treading an incredibly fine line, because fresh to the game. I'm trying not to be incredibly rude here, but there's a lack of that presence when the stuffiness goes away, and not for a bad thing. But
no.
It sucks.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think that the traditionalist side does a very poor job of helping the entrance into it. And I think the PGA Tour does a poor job of that. And whichever entity it is, of, I mean, you're talking etiquette and it's the core of the game, right? Mm-hmm. It is the foundation to the game. It's everything that it's supposed to be. The hitting the ball and all the other stuff is what it is. That's athletic skill and everything else. But the core of golf is the core of golf. And let's protect it. Well, part of protecting it is also helping educate about it. How do you do that? I don't know. I don't have the answer. I wish I did.
Mm-hmm.
And who does that fall on? I don't know. But like, it's that slope of, you want to protect that, but also like that entity of those of us who absolutely adore this game and love this game and love the basic fundamentals and foundations of it, it's kind of on us to help those along that want to be helped. Now, some people don't want to be helped. Jackasses, like, did you see the video of the dudes in Branson that drove off, you know, the floating, did you ever see that?
No,
the 19th hole in Branson, the floating green.
Okay.
You've seen, so it's actually, but like the cart path for part of the course goes up and around back behind it. Some guys drove off of it and it's like 40 feet down into it. Like the cart is in the water. You got to look up the video. It's no the most way. Insane thing you ever
seen. Yeah, I got to see this now.
and there's beer cans and everything else. So like jackasses are going to be that way. And I'm not excusing them, but you can't just chalk everybody up to falling that way or they will. Like you gotta, there's a give and a take. I mean, my club's battling that right now, like with the older guys versus our group versus we now have a bunch of 24, 25 year olds that are an influx of parents getting memberships and stuff. Mm-hmm. And how do you balance, you know, the club and the tradition and the etiquette and the caring about where you're at and taking care of things versus, you know, modernization and the world we're in now. There's no right answer, but it's a conversation I think everybody needs to have, and everybody can play a role in making it better. Sorry, that was my tangent.
No, it's good. It nails it. I mean, but it's the little things like fix your damn divots, or replace your divots in the fairways, fix your pitch marks on the greens. Mm-hmm. Don't make a bunch of noise when someone's clearly playing near you. Turn your music down when you're close to another group where it's impacting their play. Don't just throw a beer can on the golf course when you're done with it. Like or Gatorade bottle. I don't care. I'm not trying to blast the drinkers. It's totally fine. No. But you know, the point being, like, if we just recognize what we have and all appreciate and respect it together, I think we can really close the gap on being able to share that space together.
I think the new entrance into the game, for as much as some people like to, you know, shake the fist at and everything else, I think they are much more malleable than we would realize. It's no different than an older generation saying the next generation is the worst they've ever seen. Well, two generations above us, they told us that we were the worst they'd ever seen.
Well,
and it's the cycle of things that go on. And are there things in society like that? Sure. But if we like make the effort to bridge the gap, you'd be amazed at how much it could go. But who does that fall on? Like, is it the course? Is it the membership? Is it the friends? Is it people seeing somebody out on a course and be like, hey, did you fix that divot? Do you know how to fix a divot? Mm-hmm. Have you ever even been taught how to fix a divot? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, my poor wife got a taste of the old guard prick dudes this week, and I haven't decided whether I want to talk about it on the pod yet or not.
Well, mine got a taste of the old lady guard, so.
Oh, that's a tough one. And is brutal as men are, there are some collections of ladies who are remarkable in that sort of way on the golf course. I really don't think it's worth getting into. They're both terrible. Like, they're just some really awful old guard people who have no respect for anyone else, believe they run the course and it's theirs until they say otherwise, which is unfortunate. But you know, things are changing. Time's ticking away on their story.
TikTok.
I don't know how I want to go into it. We'll see. Let's skip that conversation for a bit. See if I can get some more of this wobbly pop in me, and then we'll decide if we're gonna get into it. What I really wanted to talk about, since we've absolutely killed half the episode talking about one thing that I wanted to discuss, which is fine. I haven't offered an update on my Golfdick experience in a while. And I thought it was pretty important to get there. I know you had mentioned on THP that you were going to commit a bit more to actual practice outside. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a time when you, I'm not sure if it's still set up or got reset up, but you had an indoor simulator that you put a lot of time into previously. And I think you're probably in the transition phase to getting one set up again, but you had said you're committing to outdoor practice. Has there been a continuation of that?
4 days a week.
Damn. So little context for people. 4 days a week. So you go 4 days this week. That's four more times going to that range for any extended
than last year.
For the entire year of 2025. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it's accurate. I've these friends of mine who have told me I should practice for 15 years now. I like to play golf, and the sim setup is being remedied. We have quotes coming that are going to cost a fortune for a building outside and everything, but So the decision was, I'm going to go outside and I'm going to use the range that's down the road a little bit more. And I can't hit drivers on our range because it's an old course, which is fine. So there's been a lot of like progressing through things. And lo and behold, if you work on positions and alignment and grip and the things that you're supposed to, things tend to get a little bit more consistent. And I have found ways to make it doable in doses. Like during the summer when the kids are out of school too, here they're old enough to be able to, you know, older sister can watch them. I would go and put 40 minutes in and I would come home. And then the evening I'll go putt for 20 minutes and I will come home, whatever it is. So that's been a big step for me. And yeah, it helps. I still prefer playing golf as much as I can, but it's been a big comfort going onto the course to play competitive round, I guess would be a good way to put it. I don't worry about where things are because I pretty well know what I'm working on and where things are from there. So I can just focus on, you know, shots and shot shapes, which with the way my ADD brain works, that's it's a much safer place for me to be on the golf course.
That's good. I love it. It's interesting how challenging it can be to get out there, but when you do, it feels so good to, you know, connect the dots on the things you're actually pretty good at. And people
Okay. I do remember how to hit wedges, you know, right. and it's also changed my game again to where like I'm flighting shots again. I'm doing things that I'd stopped doing because you go through ebbs and flows of rustiness and the moves and like, you know what you should do, but eventually you go to safety stuff. Well, by going out and kind of enjoying, you know, hitting wedges at targets and whatever else, it translates. These are all things that everybody's like, well, yeah, no crap. Practice is supposed to make you better, but different mindsets work differently like that. I've historically just always been more at home going and playing as many rounds as I can and playing through things. Well, why not both is what I'm starting to kind of figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. I'm happy for you.
Yeah. We'll see.
So, did we go to the simulator when you were here? I think we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the local sim spot we have, it's a decent deal and it gets us golf when it's crappy outside. Most of the time that's winter. Every once in a while it's summer when it's raining or, you know, whatever it might be. And I went with a good friend of ours and we took on the private bay, which happens to have two cameras now set up in it. So, it's a great, wonderful, horrible thing because you hit your shot and then you look over to the screen and you have an online view and a side view of your golf shot and you have to look at it every time you hit.
I don't know how I feel about that.
And I'll tell you what, man, there's nothing more motivating than seeing a golf swing you don't think is yours or you don't should be not. And it's like 2 hours of punishment basically, but I'm blown away at how rewarding that is. And I want to give full credit to the guys at Golf Tech because we spend an awful lot of time in there as I refine my game, working on angles and working on proper positioning and rotational stuff. And when you see it in the Golf Tech video, those are the things you start to recognize when you see a video of your swing, especially in slow motion. You can see what's not working and what they're trying to get you in the place of. And what I love about that is because you see the swing every time, it can evolve. So you can make these subtle changes, but it also acts like a bit of a tattletale. Like you think you're doing something and you look over, you're like, oh God, I'm not doing that at all. Like, look at me. I'm making contact with my ball and my hips have still yet to rotate. That's perfect. So long story short, I went through a 2-hour session of staring at myself and hating everything about everything. And I immediately booked another lesson. And it was nice. I had intended to go a couple months without like trying to solve it on my own. Being that I was outside and refining, I just didn't want too much going on, too many big shifts. And I went in there, I said, man, I'm seeing something and I want you to look purely at this. I know we had like a little refresher on some of the things we were working on, which all looked pretty good. I said, I really want to talk about hip rotation today. And my my guy, fortunately, immediately jumped into that. It's like, cool, we'll leave everything else. No worries. It looks good. I'm happy with it. Let's talk about rotation. So we go to two different guys that we're watching on the range. He goes, this is what they do. This is what they do really well. I think it was like Hoffman and Shoffley, and Shoffley's got like a crazy rotation. And he goes, well, they're at like 40, and you're at about 5 at contact. He goes, why don't we just get you over 10 today? Like, that's fine. So we start working on that. And something that we had been working on, well, which was my swing path with irons that were like really aggressively in and out, it started to level off a bit because I was rotating more before contact. I'm like, man, it doesn't feel stuck. It doesn't feel forced. This is really interesting. So we moved to 3-wood and I started hitting the ball really well. Moved to driver, I started hitting the ball not as well, but you know, driver's a harder one to nail down. I'm like, I got homework. I got so much to work on. And ever since that lesson, it's been like 2 weeks of just twisting my hips, you know, just really aggressively twisting them. And what came of that was this unbelievable adjustment in my driver shot, like to the point where I'm actually taking my shot scope out on the course again, because I'm not embarrassed of the numbers I'm getting with driver. And just to be able to see like, man, is it really going as far as I think it's going? And sure enough, I had two drives over 300 last week. One that was beside its divot at like 278. And I mean, that's my wheelhouse, man. I would love to get some speed numbers, like ball speed numbers. Right now it's Optum LS in the bag that has been performing crazy well with Hazardous Yellow. Shout out to the boys from Project X. Unbelievable. I love that shaft, dude. The re-return of the beauty. But it's like, that is such a rewarding feeling to go through that part of like, can't even stand to look at yourself swing, to understanding a bit more with a coach, to refining it with both with a coach and then with yourself. And I'm actually looking forward to getting back into the simulator and be like, yeah, I don't look as dumb now, do I? You know, that really fun moment of that. It feels so good and so rewarding. But it's like a collection of all these things. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. It's, I don't know, on a smaller scale, like it is like we talk about wedges and stuff. It's the same kind of thing. Cause once it like you're working on this. And then once it's like, oh, okay. Or I've been able to have a buddy take a video of me out there.
Yeah.
And you know, and none of the guys mind, they don't care. Or now with Amanda and us going, like I'll have access to her being able to do that. And it's, I don't know, practice is not as painful as I thought it was for so long, but it's good. It's, I don't know. It's something to grasp onto that is a building block. That's much more, I don't know. There's something about being foundationally solid when you go into a golf course to play. Like I've got competition golf coming up this weekend, and knowing I'm in it's a different headspace than where I have been before going into things.
So. You know, I had a conversation with someone talking about how coaching or lessons are such a weird thing. And it's like their comment was, there are some really, really bad coaches out there.
There are.
And I thought that's really interesting, because I would be willing to bet that a handful of those people you believe are bad actually really work well for some people's minds. And they talk in a way that works for those people. What I like about places like Golf Tech is you can't hide from a video of yourself.
Correct.
There are angles they use to validate their perspective, and they're also able to isolate onto those things. So as much as there is still a level of connection between solving those things, and you still need to speak the sort of same mental language, golf swing language to get there together, the ability to see it and translate it for yourself with an angle against another swing, understanding those things, I would be willing to bet that if someone committed hard enough, they could use a golf swing, like a more traditional, non like Joachim Niemann crazy angled curl, like a basic golf swing, and without being too critical, like maybe a heavier set PGA Tour pro who can't, you know, crank the, you know, uh-huh. you know, I'm talking crank the turn himself into a C as he's going to make a contact with the ball. point being, if they take a video of them and they take a video of themselves and they look at where are my hips at contact, where are their hips at contact, where is my knee bend at the very top of my swing versus theirs, what is my arm doing here? If they try and sort of piece it together, I would obviously still encourage them to go and get instruction to improve it. But I think we can learn an awful lot about ourselves using video. I think it seems like I'm simplifying it, but I really think there's a level of benefit to that.
Well, I think there's always, I'm not downplaying it, but there's always going to be a benefit to putting any kind of time like that into a craft or a thing or whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing about golf instruction is you have, I mean, it's no different than teaching people. Like, you have different types of learners. You have people who do really well with visual learning. You have people who are much more audible and can sit out of range with somebody telling them hands here, whatever. You have really high level brain functions that want, like, the golfing machine, and they want their club to be at ZXR219 or what. But it works for them. Whereas for one of us, it's going to be like, oh God. I do think also the problem with golf is a lot of times you do get some instructors, depending on where you're at, that fall victim to trends.
Oh yeah.
That's what I love about, like, Golf Tech. Golf Tech has their system, like, and it's based in, here is our empirical evidence right here. You fall into some of the other stuff. Like, you remember 2 or 3 years ago, it was Gankus.
Yeah.
And getting Scooby shallow and all these other things. And then you hear some of these other instructors talk about, like, these positions. They see students come in that have watched those videos and done that. And they're like, well, yeah, you've done that, but this is what that does to you. It's all about finding the comfort zone of what will work for you. And plus, you know, as well as I do, the other thing about golfers is there's a fear of lessons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fear of having
incredibly intimidating.
Yes. Either having to admit to yourself that you're not quite what you thought you were, that you're lacking behind, or just being overwhelmed mm-hmm. at the information that's coming to you. That's why I think, like, a golf tech does such good stuff with people.
Well, the other part is the fear of breaking it down. You hear this comment all the time. I want a Band-Aid, not a cast and a full rebuild. I don't want surgery. I want a Band-Aid. So, like, a very subtle, I don't want to start over is the conversation Correct. That always happens.
Yeah. I mean, but you also still have some of those old school, they still exist. There's old school instructors that this is the way they teach. This is what it is. And if you're going to see me, we're going to build and we're going to do this because it's the only thing they know.
That's pretty standard too. Like, I watched a really interesting video of a lot of these Asian tier women coming out on tour now. They're mm-hmm. so structured in the way that they're taught that, like, they're not built for, there's like a window of group, or there's a group of them that are not built for power. They're built for control and consistency. Yep. And it's like very prototypical for each swing. Like, there's only a small window, whereas you and I both live in the Arnie swing your swing mentality, and thank God for that. But here's the other fun part. You hear all these people say, like, I can't stand to listen to myself talk. I just can't deal with it. I feel that way about my golf swing. If it's not what I want it to be, I can't stand watching myself swing. You know, I think a lot of people fall victim of that too. It's like, the last thing I want to do is get criticized or have to look at my own swing while getting criticized.
Well, and it's already such a crazy mental space to be in mm-hmm. with all that. Cause, like, I mean, I've hit shots that I've been disgusted in, and my, you know, our buddy Derek is like, he's like, that looked great. You know? And I'm like, well, I can feel I did not do what I need to do. So, like, I don't know. It feels like the more educated you get, the more it can get really easy to be much harder on yourself.
Oh yeah.
But there's also that initial fear of, like, being willing to put yourself out there with an instructor, with somebody to trust them to lead you on the right path. But you also, I mean, it's like anything else. You hear horror stories. I think the good outweighs the bad always, if you're going to go get professional help in this game, because any good one's going to help you enjoy golf more. And I think that's what gets lost in a lot of it. Just like, why would you not want to maximize how much joy you take from this?
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Well, my favorite part, especially when I'm chatting with others, is, like, I'm saying, you know, I'm seeing this in your swing. Like, it's pretty interesting. Like, a buddy of ours, I'm like, hey, you're not really pausing at the top. Like, you're not giving the top of your swing enough time to, like, get your hips going. That your hands are leading, so it's always chasing. And then it will hit, like, 10 more shots. Like, did I pause there? I'm like, no, you went faster. He's like, no. You know, and that's kind of the joke of it. So once you get it on video and you show them, there's a lot of that, like, proof is in the pudding. That seeing is believing is such a big piece of it. I look at it as very punishing. Seeing is very punishing. But, you know, the other part of it is you condition yourself to believe you're doing something. And I think green reading is a really good example of this. Like, hey, aim your ball 3 feet right of the hole, and suddenly you're like 7 feet right because your brain's convinced you that that's where you need to aim. Like, you do all these little mental tricks, mental gymnastics to land your golf swing, and then you see it on video, like, you edited that. You know. Oh, it's brutal. It's fun though, man. It's sort of changed my perspective on a lot of things this year. I have driver, three wood, hybrid back in the bag. I have super hybrid back in the bag as a shout out to the OG. But like, I'm just trying to stop using the crutch of like a one iron, which, I mean, yeah, sounds insane, but in reality it saved me for about 3 years. I want to be a little bit more interesting. And if this is what it takes to just like totally give up on score for a little bit, but I think I'm already over that hump, and I'm really excited about it. It's been fun.
That's awesome. Like, that's what it's all about though. Like, we find that and you find more joy in it. It makes the chase better.
Wait, should we start pondering mallets again?
I mean, I already play mallet, so.
Should I start pondering a mallet again?
No.
What an epic saga that would be. Mallet ponder 2026. I haven't.
It's been 2 years. I feel like 24 is the last time you had a mallet ponder. So
it has been a while. If you guys aren't familiar, on the THP forums, which are super fun to be on, we always have the doldrums where you can't really experience things firsthand. So you tinker because you can't play. And I always think like, well, everyone else plays a mallet, so I should probably play a mallet. And I end up finding one and it doesn't work out. And I throw the parachute up and go right back to my blade. Yeah, we'll see when it gets started. 2026 only has a handful of months left.
I mean, it makes for some interesting reading.
Yeah, if you had to predict mallet 2026 version, what do you think I'm going to end up with?
Oh, I mean, like, that's difficult.
I know, that's the idea.
I would say one of the Toulons or one of the Camerons, one of the Phantoms or one
yeah
of
the new Phantoms look sick.
The new Phantoms are pretty fantastic. If not for the insert on my Odyssey, I would probably still be playing mine. So,
yeah, they look really good. Actually, everyone's making great looking product right now. Seen some.
There's so much good stuff. Yeah. I mean, I caught myself today. Like, I'm playing in our club Ryder Cup this weekend. And I showed up to the course with our buddy Derek. And he's like, why do you have so many clubs in your bag? I had two sets of irons, two drivers. And it's like, he's like, you're playing great with what you got. I was like, I know, but what? So it's
standard makeup. Yeah. Well, if you're good with that, you got to be great with the other one, right? Are you still doing mini or are you full on driver?
Still playing mini. I hit driver. We went and played in a fundraiser for one of my high school kids that's now playing college golf. We surprised them and went out there and played it. And it's a big course. We were playing from 6750. And I hit driver all day, and I hit driver really, really, really well. So it's a very comfortable thing. It's just, you've been on my course. Mini lends itself really well for me for a lot of the holes.
A lot of good shapes too.
I mean, I still hit my mini driver past most of the guys' drivers, but, it's a staple. It's a comfort one. Cause I don't need a 3 wood off the deck. So I might as well use that spot for something like that.
Interesting.
The Tour Edge is living strong in that spot.
Nice. I love it. What else you want to tell me today, buddy?
Oh, I don't even know.
The boys miss me over there. Too much chaos.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. I'm not going to be able to play in blackjack next year. So there's an auction for you. How many guys are trying to decide if you would come play with them next year?
We're going to have to discuss this off camera.
We'll have to talk about that.
That's dangerous. All right, buddy. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on and talking it up today. I think we had things that needed to be discussed on tour. I haven't talked to her in a while. It's fun to get back into it a little bit. I appreciate it.
Always a blast, man. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. Hey, if you guys are playing golf this week, have fun. Tell me if you care. Get on THP and tell me if you care about the tour or not. If you have like the perfect fix. Tell me if Wyndham Clark was a little bit too selfish with the rough, or if it's just something you've seen all the time. You feel like people need to get over it. Stop being babies. And if you are playing this weekend, have a great time. I'm playing twice. I can't wait. The weather looks absolutely perfect. And yeah, I better go low. Otherwise, back to the simulator to watch myself swing, which is terrifying. We'll see you guys next week.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, everybody. Don from True Temper back here with another episode of Shaft University. This week's question is about our Acra Arc line and what it is. One of the things noted is it looks really cool. We've got a lot of mirror finish details on that shaft. So if you haven't seen it yet, go to our brand new sweet looking website and check it out so you can see for yourself. ARC is an acronym. You all know I love acronyms. It stands for Aspire, Refine, and Compete. And those are really age groups. So Aspire is for our junior golfers, Refine for the core age group, and then Compete for the old guys like me that need a little bit more help. It is a fitting product, so you'll need to go see a PFC fitter to get fit into the right arc for you. We also have a really cool junior graphite iron shaft for those of you in the Refine or Compete group who have youngsters who are picking up the game. Hope that helps. Talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.